Welcome, welcome, welcome. I would like to welcome you to episode 419 of the Unpopular Podcast. This is the man, the myth, the legend, Jalen Hunter. Here at the Unpopular Podcast, I'm not really asked to agree with me, I'm asked you to hear me out. Life changes constantly. And with life changing constantly, I think it's very important to understand how to adapt to change. And every day, every second, every minute, we get older. And it's important that we understand not only do we get older, but things change with us being older. And all year, we've been talking about, is this the end of the Golden State dynasty, the Golden State Big Three? And two things can be true in this situation, in this scenario. I think the way that Steph Curry played, it's easy to say, hey, there's still a chance, because Steph Curry is still a top tier, one of the best guards in the league. But focusing mainly on that, for a lot of people, blinded them for everything else that we've seen. What I want to focus on and what I want to hone in on is Klay Thompson. So, Golden State, there was a lot of issues with Golden State this year. And while I don't think Klay Thompson was the biggest issue, I think more times than not, him fighting with reality, fighting with inevitability, put Golden State in this situation. Again, I don't think Klay Thompson was the main reason why Golden State found themselves in the play-in, and Golden State essentially lost the first game of the play-in, so their season is over. I'm not blaming Klay Thompson. In fact, if you want to have this conversation, we'll have this conversation now before we go on to Klay Thompson. I think you're seeing why the regular season is so important. The regular season is so important, and I've said this on a multitude of occasions. The regular season is so important because you build habits throughout the regular season. The thing that veteran-laden and successful veteran-laden teams have over a lot of people is those habits are built over time, so they can kind of slack off a little bit during the regular season if they've had a long-standing record of success. We've seen that with a lot of teams, and we've seen that sometimes with the Golden State Warriors when they had Kevin Durant. There were seasons where, or games, stretches of games where they would just look lethargic, but because they're so talented and they have such a strong culture of winning currently or in the current time, that it was easy to slack off, but they were still building talented habits. This was probably the most inconsistent season that we have seen from the Golden State Warriors, even going back to last year. The only consistent was Steph Curry. And that's why a lot of people said, yo, you can never count out Golden State because they have Steph Curry, and Steph Curry still plays at a high level. But everything else around Steph Curry, everything else around this Golden State Warriors team was inconsistent, from the players, from the coaches, from the front office. I've said this before, and when I did say this before, it was about football, but I think that this is a sports thing. The loudest team during the regular season going into the season is usually the team that doesn't really prosper. Usually the team that doesn't get to the promised land or get to or hit their goals. Who were the loudest teams going into the season and in this season? The Golden State Warriors with all the talk, you know, the Draymond Green situation, the Draymond Green suspensions. Is this over? Is this not? Klay Thompson's contract. Jonathan Kuminga going to the press saying, yo, I don't trust Steve Kerr. Steve Kerr in his very inconsistent lineups and his very inconsistent rotations. Golden State was one of the loudest teams this season and going into the season was another team that was loud. The Memphis Grizzlies, everything going on with Ja Morant. The Memphis Grizzlies had one of their worst seasons in recent memory. What I'm saying is this. The collapse of this Golden State team. Father time plays a huge part. I'm not just solely putting it on one person. I've said this so many times. Dynasties don't last forever. And name me a dynasty that ended gracefully. But the regular season, again, see, this is where I will put emphasis on a player. And this is where I question moving forward the leadership of a Draymond Green. I've done it before in the episode, so I'm not going to linger on it, but it's hard for me to hear someone call themselves a leader when they continuously put their team in situations that are not beneficial for the grand goal. Draymond Green was suspended majority of the year. Well, I think he played 55 games out of 82. And the games that he missed was due to suspension mostly. Whether it was the Rudy Gobert thing, whether it was the Yusuf Nurkic thing. And on top of that, that doesn't even include the games that he was ejected from. I understand that Draymond Green's fieriness, Draymond Green's approach to the game got him to where he is. And I'm never going to say that Draymond Green doesn't deserve to be where he is. I think Draymond Green was a main reason why, not the biggest, but a very important piece and a very important reason why Golden State saw the dynasty last as long as it did. But even in that, there has been too many times in the finals against Cleveland Cavaliers this year. The stomp last year, there was multiple times where Draymond Green put his team in a position where they'd have to overcome his actions. And I think that is the main, it's not solely on Draymond Green, obviously, because again, I said the whole team was inconsistent. But they are a much better team with Draymond Green, and that is a credit to him and how good he is. But when you continually take yourself out of the fray, when you continually take yourself off the court because of your emotions, that puts pressure and that puts weight on a team that's already fragile. This is a old team. Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Chris Paul. You, Draymond Green, this is a older team. So there's two completely different sides. There's really no in between. And what I mean is there's really old and then there's really young. You have, again, Steph, Klay, Draymond Green, Chris Paul. And then on the other side, you have Pazinski. You have Trace Jackson. You have Jonathan Kuminga. You have Moses Moody. There's no in between. There's no bridge guy. So you're putting so much pressure on a team that can't really afford that type of weight without you. And if Draymond Green was able to control his emotions, if Draymond Green was more consistently a part of this team this year, they more than likely would not be in the play-in, which means they more than likely would not ultimately have lost. I'm not saying they were finals bound, but what I'm saying is they are a much better team with Draymond Green. The issue is Draymond Green continues to take himself off of this team. That was the biggest reason. Again, the regular season is when you build consistency, when you build habits that can last you in the playoffs. Well, when your regular season is filled with inconsistency, what do you think is going to happen when you get to the playoffs? When, if you get to the playoffs, if you get to the play-in, you're going to get a game like you got against the Sacramento Kings, who, might I add, has also dealt with inconsistency this year, but their inconsistency has mostly been injuries. We're going to talk about that in a second, how injuries plagued this play-in. But where I want to circle back to Klay Thompson. Because Klay Thompson finds himself in a position that he has not been in his entire career, and that is uncertainty looking forward. Klay Thompson has been a mainstay for the Golden State Warriors since he came into the league. And Klay Thompson is a very interesting person because you can tell that he goes by the beat of his own drum. It doesn't, the things that a lot of people care about, it doesn't really seem to be on Klay Thompson's radar. But I will say this. Along with everything that has happened in his career, as far as the injuries, an ACL injury, an Achilles injury, both of which go 10, 15 years ago would be career ending, especially back-to-back injuries like he suffered. On top of the fact that I've come in here on several occasions and said, it's important to build on your skill, because when you get situations like Klay Thompson had as far as the injuries, you can't just rely on, you know, your God-given talent. You can't just rely on things that can wither away. That's my issue with John Wall. John Wall relied so heavily on his athleticism, which, don't get me wrong, his athleticism and his play got him to Kentucky, got him the number one overall pick for the Wizards, got him all-star selections, defense selections. John Wall was one of the best point guards in the league, but you understood that once his athleticism goes, he doesn't really have a second win, and he tried too late in his career to get that second win, i.e. he tried too late in his career to learn how to shoot a consistent shot, to the point where once his athleticism goes, once he can't be as explosive as he is, once he can't really play defense to the way that he's used to playing, he's an ineffective player, i.e. out the league. I'm not saying that Klay Thompson is in that same boat exactly, but what I'm saying is Klay Thompson has been the same player his majority of his career. He's been a catch-and-shoot player. He's been a really good defender, very good defender, but he's just really been a shooter that when he catches fire. But the issue is Klay Thompson had depreciating skills, i.e. his defense, i.e. his shooting. You're always going to be able to shoot, but to shoot to the caliber that he's used to, that's not always the case. So on top of the inconsistency this year, on top of the fact that Golden State went in as one of the oldest teams in the league, as well as the shortest team in the league. I think this was the first year that you saw a lot of things get to Klay Thompson. And when I say a lot of things, the main thing was his contract situation. Obviously, someone that hasn't been in the league, someone that's not played in the league, I can't 100% empathize with him. But what I can say is I know someone that understands that people pay you for your value. I understand how he would try to elevate his value this year. Well, the issue is it's a little too late. I'm not saying that Klay Thompson's trash. I'm not saying that Klay Thompson is just, you know, Thanos type ash and isn't good. But what I'm saying is Klay Thompson has struggled with accepting that he's not the same. And on top of that, he hasn't built on that foundation like a Steph Curry has. Steph Curry came in, he wasn't as good a dribbler, and he had ankle issues. Well, with that, he developed a dribble, a handle. He developed court vision. So this is going to be a very interesting year for Klay Thompson, or interesting offseason for Klay Thompson, because obviously he's in a situation that he's never been in, and that is a free agent. Well, possibly a free agent. Klay Thompson chose the absolute worst time to have one of his worst games of the year, and that obviously was in the plan when he went 0 for 10. Now, he has done that this year on a multitude of occasions, several occasions, where he's had stinkers or he's tried to force his shot. But to do it in the play-in, when your team needs you the most, you know. So I'm very interesting to see where he goes. I mean, you have the Lakers. He could be a good fit. The Magic, you hear that a lot. The Timberwolves. The Timberwolves always need shooters. I think his best bet is Golden State. I think when you go to a place that you have, when you go to some place new, when you played your whole career in one spot, there's expectations that follow you there that I don't know if Klay Thompson is prepared for. I don't know if Klay Thompson is ready for. I don't know if Klay Thompson honestly deserves, and that's no disrespect to him. But when you're getting someone like Klay Thompson, you're also getting someone that is a four-time champion. You're also getting someone that was part of a dynasty, a main part of a dynasty. And you're going to go to a team where you're looked at, some of those teams, like the Magic, you're looked at to be the man. You're looked up to be a culture changer. Well, I don't know if that's Klay Thompson, and that's no offense to Klay Thompson. I think his best bet is to stay with Golden State, but again, I don't know if Golden State. See, the thing that people don't like to talk about, but it is true, is money dictates sports. Not just for the teams, but for the construction of teams. And the reason why Golden State was able and willing to pay over the luxury tax year after year after year is because it resulted in wins. If I'm a billionaire, I don't care if I'm paying over the luxury tax if I continue to get championships year after year and those championships draw more revenue and I get more fans because there's more eyes looking at my team. If I'm going to pay $30 million and I'm a billionaire, what is that to me? But what I look like paying 30, like 150, 300, $400 million over the luxury tax for a team that Dick can't even make the playoffs. That's why I said in one of the recent episodes I said, if this team doesn't make it, I expect, I'm not going to say a full blow up, but I definitely expect major changes, because you can't justify. This is the second year in the row that they either underachieved as far as, well, they either didn't make it to a conference finals or didn't even make the playoffs. In fact, they haven't made the playoffs in 3 of the last 4 years, I think. It's hard to justify to an owner that you're willing to pay a crazy amount over the luxury tax for a team that isn't currently constructed, isn't good enough to make the playoffs. And when one of your best players, who is up there in age, who has a lengthy, not lengthy, but an injury history, goes 0-10 in the biggest game of the season. Yeah. So I think Golden State is going to try to keep him, but at their price. Which is why I'm not confident that Klay Thompson is going to stay, because Golden State's price may be lower than somebody else's price. And I don't know. Obviously, I don't think anyone knows the mindset of Klay Thompson, but I don't know. But we will see. We will see. But I do officially think the dynasty is over. Now, that doesn't mean that they can't win it all moving forward. Like, they can't win it all next year. But what I will say is, gone are the days where you go into a season expecting Golden State to be amongst the top teams in the NBA. Those days are over. And I will say, as currently constructed, as we obviously saw, this team is not good enough to make the playoffs. Now, obviously, yes, a lot of that, like I did say, was Draymond Green not being there for majority of the season due to suspensions. But this team needs to make a big swing. I don't know how they'll do it, but this team needs to make a big swing. They don't have another player that consistently. They need another all-star. Let's say that. They need another all-star. I don't know how they'll do it. I don't know if they can do it. It's going to be very tough, especially with Klay Thompson's situation happening, especially with Chris Paul's situation happening. Because if Chris Paul's on this team week one of next year, that means that more than likely they were unable to get no one except league minimums. And league minimums historically ain't winning you no championships. So if they're able to put a package together to get maybe a Paul George, maybe the Clippers lose in round one to the Dallas Mavericks and it's over with for that team. Maybe you can get, if you get a Paul George, I think that definitely opens, and you're able to keep Klay, that definitely opens that window, that championship window. Maybe not dynasty window, but championship window. But as currently constructed, and it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough. But as right now, that Golden State aura is officially over. I talked about the play-in being one of the best things that happened to the NBA because of the urgency and because of the importance of the regular season now. Hell, again, we just talked about it. If Golden State was more consistent during the regular season, if Golden State was, you know, built those habits, and if Draymond Green wasn't in and out of the lineup all the time due to suspension, they probably could have been a 4-5 seed. Again, I'm not saying they would win a championship, but I'm saying that they would at least be in the playoffs. So the play-in has been one of the best things that have happened to the league since its inception. And when I mean inception, I mean the play-in inception. And as I'm recording, it is Friday afternoon. So the games have not happened tonight. The games tonight is the Chicago Bulls and Miami Heat playing for that last eighth spot, and the Sacramento Kings going up against the New Orleans Pelicans. This year's play-in has felt different, though. Still exciting. Don't get me wrong. Still exciting. But this year's play-in has been riddled with injury. Almost, not all, but almost every team has dealt with injury in this play-in. And injuries that aren't just a tweaked ankle. Like, these are series-changing injuries. Whether we talk about, you know, the Bulls and going in not having Zach LaVine. Talk about the Heat losing Jimmy Butler to an MCL injury. And he's going to be out. Even if they win, and again, I'm shooting this before the games happen, but even if they beat the Chicago Bulls, I don't see much success happening to them in the playoffs without Jimmy Butler. I'll just keep it at that. I think what you wanted to do was get the 2 seed. Like, you should have beat the 76ers. So you would play the Knicks. The last thing you want to do is have to face the Boston Celtics if you beat the Bulls. Boston Celtics without Jimmy Butler. And it looks like Jimmy Butler is going to be out for several weeks. And then you have on the other side, the Western Conference, you have the Sacramento Kings that don't have Kevin Huerter, that don't have Malik Monk, and Zion Williamson, who hurt his hamstring. And you know what sucks about that Zion Williamson injury, man? I hate when people give doubters ammunition, you know? Because that's been the fear and concern of a lot of players. Let me not make it broad. That's been the concern when we talk about Zion Williamson. It's like, is he going to be able to stay healthy at the most important time? And he hurt his hamstring on a non-contact, like, it wasn't that much of a contact injury. And now he's going to be out possibly for several weeks. Because a hamstring is something you do not play with. That's why we still, or I know they're not in the plan, but that's why more than likely we're not going to see Giannis in the first round or the beginning of the first round of the playoffs. But I think that when you lose a star, it's over with. I don't care who you are. I don't care what team. And you lose a star, it's over with. Especially on a team that is fighting for their hopeful playoff lives. I'm not saying it's over with as far as they could still beat the Bulls. Again, I'm recording this before the games have happened, so I don't know. But it's over with for all four of these teams. And what I mean by that is, if New Orleans wins and Zion can't play, it's over with for them. The Thunder are going to make easy work of them, as well as the Kings. The Kings can catch fire, yes, but when you get to the playoffs, when you're playing a team that is statistically better than you in almost every way, that's when you need all your players, and you're not going to have Kevin Huerter. You're not going to have Malik Monk. It's crazy how I look at all four of these teams and think to myself, these are all pretty much, lack of a better term, lambs to the slaughter. I don't see a 1-8 upset with the Heat and the Bulls because Jimmy Butler's. I understand Jimmy Butler's a thing, but Jimmy Butler is probably not going to be there for the playoffs. It sucks, man. It sucks. Oh, and I do think that we have seen the last of the DeJounte Murray, Trae Young led Hawks. Like, you lose to, you let Kobe White, and no offense to Kobe White, that's a North Carolina product, shouts out to him, but you let Kobe White drop 42 on y'all head. And there was, and both players have already been in trade talks majority of their time in Atlanta, so I just think it's a wrap. I will say shout out to the NBA because the play-in, even though injuries have riddled throughout the play-in, it has been very interesting. I mean, hell, the Lakers squeaked by because Zion Williamson. Yo, the Lakers were up like 18 points, and the New Orleans Pelicans hawked them down. And to me, if it wasn't for Zion getting hurt, the Pelicans probably would have won that game. I'm not saying that Klay Thompson was the only reason why they lost, but I think Klay Thompson going 0-10 and kind of zapping the life out of the team, and the Sacramento Kings understanding that this team, the Golden State Warriors, don't really have another player that can create their own shot, so let's just blitz Steph Curry, you know. But again, I'm recording this before the playing game, so I don't know. We'll probably talk about him. Well, we'll probably talk about the playoffs next episode. But hey, it's been good. Speaking of it's been good, let me give my all NBA, all defense, all rookie teams. Let's start with, I think, the all NBA third team is where I'm going to start. Now, what's frustrating about this, and we knew this was going to come, but now that it's here, it kind of put a damper on the whole process, you know. And that's no, this is obviously my prediction, and this is no offense to anyone that essentially is going to be on the official list. This is no offense to anyone on my list, but it is unfortunate, and it does suck that injuries play a huge part of these teams now, seeing as though the whole 35 or 65 game threshold, you know, it plays a major part. Like, it's going to play a part in Donovan Mitchell probably not or not being on these teams. It's going to play a huge part, obviously, Joel Embiid not being on these teams. Like, Joel Embiid probably would have won the MVP if he continued at the rate that he was before his injury. It just sucks, you know. It really sucks. But all these players that are on these teams are deserving. So let's start with the all NBA team. I probably should have started with the rookie team. In fact, I'm gonna do that. Hold up. let's do it. Let's start with all rookie second team. Because I don't wanna I just feel like the crescendo, the ornament on the top is obviously the All-NBA teams. And the way that I kind of, you know, constructed it didn't go that way. So let's start with All-Rookie teams. And let's start with, you know, the All-Rookie second team. I think that this was a very interesting year in rookies because outside of one or two, nobody was really paying attention to the rookies. Now, they had a lot of rookies had a really, really good year. And this was one of the first years where a lot of the rookies that didn't get much attention were key factors for their team success. It was just because they weren't one or two players that got most of the attention, which obviously those players rightfully so got it, you know. But let me give you my all-rookie second team. You have Carson Wallace. You have Keontae George. You have G.G. Jackson, Amid Thompson, and Derek Lively. Now, the name on this list that a lot of people are going to be shocked about is G.G. Jackson. Now, G.G. Jackson is a beneficiary, unfortunately, of all the inconsistency that was with the Memphis Grizzlies, whether we talk about John Morant being in out or being out, most of this season. Whether we talk about Marcus Smart getting hurt, whether we talk about Derrick Rose, you know, and his, I don't know, inconsistency as far as play time. G.G. Jackson averaged 14.6 points a game. I don't think he would be able to do that if, obviously, the team was intact. Obviously, Brandon Clark not being there also helped his playing time. Gigi, he had 40 point games. He almost had a 50 point game. Like, because nobody really watched the Memphis Grizzlies because of everything that happened, and they really weren't good this year. I mean, they only won 27 games. They may have overlooked, you know, how good he was, but Gigi Jackson was great. Along with Carson Wallace, he played on a very stacked team. So he obviously didn't get the attention that his game warranted, but he was still good. I was kind of difficult between the Thompson brothers, but I think Amin, for what how important he was to the Rockets, even though Asar was really good for Detroit, I gave it to Amin. Keontae George, nobody really talked about the Jazz this year because they came back to reality. Last year, they were really good, better than they probably wanted to be. This year, yeah, they put a stop to that. And Keontae George, he was out of Baylor, I believe. He was really good. And Derek Lively, we know Derek Lively was a very important cog for the even though he did suffer some or lose some time due to injury, and condolences to his family. I think he lost his mother. So I pray for his strength. But he was really good on the court. That's why my all second team is Carson Wallace, Keontae George, J.G. Jackson, Amin Thompson, and Derek Lively. My first team. Now, my first team is Brandon Pozinski, Jaime Jaquez, Brandon Miller, Chet Holmgren, and Victor Wembanyama. To me, those were the five best rookies, in my opinion. I know you're going to look at how the expectation of Golden State coming in and what really happened wasn't, you know, the same. But Pods was a extremely important piece to that team. And Jaime Jaquez, I said this before, him and Brandon Miller could have gone back and forth between who would have won Rookie of the Year if it wasn't for Victor Wembanyama and Chet Holmgren. All five of them, again, Brandon Pozinski, Jaime Jaquez, Brandon Miller from the Charlotte Hornets, Chet Holmgren, and Victor Wembanyama, all were great. I will look at, spoiler alert, this isn't the last list that both Victor Wembanyama and Chet Holmgren will find themselves in, at least on my list. And those are the pure definition of super rookies. And what I mean by that is rookies that not only are ready day one, not day one, because obviously Chet Holmgren hurt himself last year. He was a rookie last year. But both Chet Holmgren and Victor Wembanyama can be staples of this league moving forward, especially Victor. He might even be one now. And I think that while obviously they won't get the same amount of coverage or whatever, I think Brandon, I think all the rookies on the first team, in my opinion, can be household names moving forward. Like, I think Pods, when the team kind of gets moved over from Steph, Clay, and them, it could be him, or if he goes to another team, I think with his shooting ability, with his ball handling skills, I think he can be really good. Jaime Jaquez is just perfect for Miami, you know, and Brandon Miller, he's a scoring machine at times. So that's my first team, and I think that they all deserve to be on the first team. Let's go to my defensive second team. defense is not a glamorized skill, obviously. And unless you're sending someone's shot to the third row or making someone touch earth by crossing them up, nobody really, or you're touching earth because somebody crossed you up, nobody really pays attention to defense that much, which is a detriment to a lot of defensive players. But most of these players aren't big names outside of a few, but I do think that they obviously deserve to be all defensive players. So my all defensive second team is Jalen Suggs, Lou Dort, Jaden McDaniels, Bam Adebayo, and Chet Holmgren. It kind of goes back to what I just said about Chet Holmgren, as far as he is a super rookie, to say the least. He was one of the best defenders in the league as far as rim protecting. Now, obviously, when you have someone as tall and as lanky as he is, you'd be like, well, duh, of course he's, you know, of course he's one of the best defenders. But it's his awareness. I think that's one of the biggest hurdles that rookies have to get over, is the speed of the game. The speed is definitely unlike anything that they've seen. And because obviously there's a talent level, but there's also a speed level from the NBA from college to the NBA. And Chet Holmgren has been great. You know, he's been, to be on the same defensive list as Bam Adebayo, Jaden McDaniels, who a lot of people think is one of the best on-ball defenders. And I think Lou Dort has probably put himself in that category, that probably most underrated players as far as defense. You never really hear his name when we talk about defensive player of the year, when we talk about all defensive teams. But he may not even be on the official all defensive teams. But I think Lou Dort is a very important cog, not only to the Oklahoma City Thunder, but to how defense is played in the NBA. And a lot of mainstream men are talking about him, but I think Lou Dort is good enough to be on my all defensive second team. Then you have Jalen Suggs. The Magic is probably the best kept secret this year. Obviously, they're in the playoffs, but a lot of people are confused as to how they got to the playoffs. Yes, you have Paolo Banchero. Yes, you have Franz Wagner, like a very good team. But the defense that Jalen Suggs provides to this team is irreplaceable. And the fact that I think he's only in his third year is incredible. So my all-defensive second team is Jalen Suggs, Lou Dort, Jaden McDaniels, Bam Adebayo, and Chet Holmgren. Then you have the first team. Again, these names are a little more household, at least a few of them. I have Alex Caruso, Herb Jones, Anthony Davis, Victor Wembanyama, and Rudy Gobert. The one thing that I hate about voting or the voting for these awards and everything is, I feel like when the media and when people have their sights set on somebody, it sticks with them. Like, there's really nothing you can do. Now, I will say this. It's looking like Rudy Gobert is going to win his fourth Defensive Player of the Year award, and I think that he would be, I could be wrong, but I think he's the first player to ever win four. He would be the first player to ever win four. If he does win it, which is looking like it's a foregone conclusion, then congratulations to him. He has been one of the best defenders, whether we talk about, you know, rim protecting. He's obviously been one of the best rim protectors, and just his defensive pressure for a team, or his defensive presence for a team that definitely needs it, especially when you see how Karl Anthony Towns, who isn't the best defender, but Karl Anthony Towns has been out most of the year due to an injury. But my frustration comes when you look at what Anthony Davis has done. You know, we just talked about, you know, stigmas, and once you get a stigma on you, like Zion Williams has, and once you get that title on you, it's very hard to get it off. That's what Shouts out to, I think it was Theo Pinson's podcast. Raymond Felton was on it, and he was talking about how difficult it is to overcome labels and overcome stigmas that are put on you. And rightfully so. I mean, we know the labels and stigma that was put on Raymond Felton as far as his weight and his inconsistency. Now, it was funny that he was talking about that, and it clearly looked like he was overweight, but he is also not playing. So he's living life. He's doing what he wants to do. Shouts out to him. North Carolina product. One of the best North Carolina players that they've ever had, by the way. Yeah, you know. But I want to shout out Anthony Davis, because the stigma, obviously, with him is he continues to get hurt. And when he does get hurt, that means he usually misses a bunch of games. Anthony Davis, I don't even think he's missed 10 games this year. Anthony Davis, I think, has played well in the 70s as far as games played. And I know it's fun to talk about, as unfortunate to him, it's funny to talk about, oh, streak closed, this, that, and the third. But Anthony Davis has been an extreme consistent this year for the LA Lakers. And on top of that, you've seen how important he is on the defensive side of the ball again. I think that's one of the reasons why we say, when healthy, Anthony Davis is one of the best players in the league, because not only can he be a driving force for your team offensively, but he can also be the best defensive player on your team and a defensive anchor for your team. And when you look at my All-NBA first team, Alex Caruso is by far the best defender on the Chicago Bulls, and a team that has absolutely no business. Even if they do make the playoffs, shout out to them. If they don't, this team had no business in even being in the play-in. They're below 500. You had Lonzo out again. He hasn't played since 2022, I don't believe. When you have Zach LaVine being out, this team had no business being in the play-in. But you had consistent play from Alex Caruso, especially defensively. Herb Jones is Herb Jones. I mean, he is the best defensive player for the Pelicans, a team that, again, I don't know if they've won or not, but a team that there really wasn't many expectations for this team because of the injury history that their best players have sustained. But Herb Jones has been great. He's been one of the best all-ball defenders. I think he is amongst the league leaders in deflections as far as steals. Herb Jones is great. We just talked about Anthony Davis. Victor Wembanyama, man. Like, he... when you talk about prospects, and you talk about, you know, the hype that comes after... It was very hard. There's... How do I put this into perspective? When you're touted as high of a prospect, when you have the expectations that Victor Wembanyama had coming into the season, mind you, remember, and I don't know if you guys remember, but there's been a few players in my lifetime that has had the same or close to the same hype coming into the league. LeBron James, I'll probably say Ben Simmons, and Victor Wembanyama. Now, there was... and Zion Williamson. Those four, I don't think there's been another player that had the same amount of buzz coming out of either college or high school or overseas. When we talk about Victor Wembanyama, they were projected to be league changers. There's, you know, when you're a draft or lottery pick, especially number one, you're expected to be a franchise player. But these players had potentially greatest of all time tags attached to them. Now, we know what LeBron James turned into, like LeBron, probably the GOAT. We also know what Ben Simmons turned into. Very high potential. We're not going to go down that Ben Simmons road, but, you know, as well as Zion Williamson. We know his height, but, you know. But Victor Wembanyama, there was a lot of people that saying that he could possibly be better. He could be a better prospect than LeBron James was. And I'm not saying that he was. I didn't go back and look at LeBron James' rookie year, but what I'm saying is Victor Wembanyama, you can argue that he is a top 10 player right now. There is no argument that he is one of the best players under 25. There is no argument that, you know, moving forward, he will, you know, barring injury, knock on wood, there's no argument that Victor Wembanyama will not be one of the best players in the league, like, moving forward. But when we talk about where he is today, he is not only one of the best players, he's one of the best defenders, and he's good enough to. There's a reason why I think he's probably going to finish second in Defensive Player of the Year, and that's even over Anthony Davis, who has been great this year. All the defensive – boy. Watching – man. So, look, my first – my All-NBA or All-Defensive Team, first team is Alex Caruso, Herb Jones, Anthony Davis, Victor Wembanyama, and Rudy Gobert. Rudy Gobert, he's probably going to win his fourth Defensive Player of the Year award. Shouts out to him. Victor's probably going to finish second. Anthony Davis probably going to finish third. And the defensive pressure and the defensive presence that Alex Caruso and Herb Jones brings is second to none, outside of obviously the other three that's on my first team. So that's my all defensive team. Let's go with the all NBA teams now. Let's get back. And this is kind of where you see the biggest impact to a team because of injury. Now, riddled throughout this entire episode, riddled throughout my entire teams, all rookie team, all defensive team, injuries affected, whether some blatantly and or some, you know, you may not think about. Again, I feel if the roster that the Grizzlies thought they were going to get day one, that roster probably would not have allowed Gigi Jackson to be on my all-rookie team. I don't know if he would have been able to get as much playing time. I definitely don't think if he was going to get that much playing time, he wouldn't get as many shots as he puts up. I just think injuries played a huge part of Gigi Jackson getting on my team. Defensive team, Alex Caruso. I think Alex Caruso is he's always been a really good defensive player, and I think that he probably still would have been an all defensive team, but I don't think the focus would have been on Alex Caruso, because I don't know if he would have got the same amount of defensive assignments because of Zach LaVine. I'm not saying Zach LaVine is the same defender. Like, I would never disrespect Alex Caruso like that. But I just think that Alex Caruso wouldn't be as, you know, needed, because that would be in a crowded backcourt, you know. Because I know that they're trying to do the whole DeMar DeRozan playing small forward, power forward, but don't get me started on that. But like I said, I think that these all NBA teams are definitely especially the all NBA teams is definitely a product of injuries. And as unfortunate as it is, and as all of these players are definitely deserving of being on the team, it just sucks, you know. But this is my all NBA third team. I will also say this before I give my third team, before I give all my teams. Not only was this difficult due to injury, but this was probably one of the first years that it was extremely difficult to make these teams, because it felt like you were snubbing one player or snubbing The criteria, it was very hard sticking to a criteria. I'll just say that. It was very hard sticking to a criteria because I can make cases for all, 15 of these players being on the first team, you know? So, yeah. But here's my third team. You have Tyrese Maxey, Tyrese Halliburton, Jaylen Brown, LeBron James, and Victor Wembanyama. LeBron, Tyrese Maxey, especially stepping up for the 76ers with Joel Embiid being out a lot of the year, dropping a couple of fit, like he, Vic, Tyrese Maxey probably, I think, has earned himself a most improved player award, and he has been one of the best guards, especially in the East. He's been one of the best guards. That's inarguable, especially when you look at the stats and you look at everything that he's done, as well as Tyrese Halliburton. The reason why I have Tyrese Halliburton on the second team is because there was a steep drop off from how he played in the beginning of the year to how he played at the end of the regular season. Now, I will attest that I believe he's not 100% healthy. He hasn't been since, you know, he got hurt. But I do think that there were some incentives of him playing. Obviously, we don't need to get into that. But I think that Tyrese Halliburton is playing through injury. And even with him playing through injury, he's still a very good player. And he still had had the best year of his career. And that's why I have him on the third team. I just think if his play was able to stay as consistent as it was in the beginning of the year, he probably would have been in my second team. But Jaylen Brown, he's the second most important player and the second best player on a team that is record-wise the best team in basketball, and that is the Boston Celtics. I've said this multiple years now, but I think this is the biggest this is probably the team, like this year is the year that I mean it the most, and that is if this Boston Celtics team that has the best record in the NBA, that has the deepest team, that has the best starting five, that has arguably two players that I think are going to make the All-NBA team, that has a champion on the team, or if they do not win a championship this year, it's never going to happen. Like, ever. But that also is a testament to how good this team is and how good Jaylen Brown has been. So I have Jaylen Brown All-NBA third team. I know people are probably going to hear it and say Brown on third team is a snub. I think LeBron James has been incredible this year. I think LeBron James is continuously holding off father time to an extent. I think that he's obviously getting older, and he obviously can't do what he did when he was in Cleveland, when he was in, you know, Miami. But LeBron James has still been great, and LeBron James is the main reason why the Lakers find themselves in the playoffs. Like, he's the main. I do think that Anthony Davis is also a big part, and the play of D'Angelo Russell. No, a lot of people don't talk about him, or when they do talk about him, he's like the butt of the joke. But D'Angelo Russell has been really good, so shouts out to him. But yeah, I have LeBron James third team. I just think that there have been players at, you know, the forward position that have been better and more vital for their team success. So yeah, I have LeBron, and then Victor Wembanyama. Again, you can argue, I know he's been on every single team, rookie team, defense team, and now All-NBA for me. You can argue that he's a top 10 player in the league. And you can't really argue that for any other rookie. Chet has been great. Chet has been incredible. But I just think Victor is just better. And I think it's going to reflect that, especially when we talk about Rookie of the Year. So, again, my third team is Tyrese Maxey, Tyrese Halliburton, Jaylen Brown, LeBron James, and Victor Wembanyama. Then you got the All-NBA second team. My All-NBA second team is Jalen Brunson, Steph Curry, Anthony Edwards, Domantas Sabonis, and Anthony Davis. Jalen Brunson, what he's doing with the New York Knicks, being able to take the New York Knicks when they lose their one of their best players in Julius Randle, and you don't have Mitchell Robinson for a lot of the season. In fact, you don't have Hartenstein for a lot of the season. It's just most of the players on this team have been in and out of the lineup due to injury. And because of the play of Jalen Brunson, you're able to elevate this team, that is the New York Knicks, to the second seed in the East. I think that's been incredible. There's a lot, I'm sure, I don't know if you will, but I know that there's going to be, I think there's going to be at least one or two votes for MVP for him. I don't think he is the MVP, but again, what he's doing for this team and his importance to this team is is immeasurable. Jalen Brunson has been great. Now, I know a lot of people are going to say, why the hell you got Steph on this team? And how is Steph on the second team and Tyrese Maxey and Halliburton, two players that are in the playoffs, how are they not in it? We have talked all year about Golden State. We have talked all year about the state of Golden State. And one thing that we have said consistently is Steph Curry, it's really the most consistent player on this team is Steph Curry. And Steph Curry more than likely is going to win the Clutch Player of the Year. This is the second year that award has been rewarded. I think last year was De'Aaron Fox. Steph Curry is still one of the best players. Steph Curry is still one of the top guards in the league. I'm not saying he's top three or four anymore, but he is still arguably top 10. Steph was the constant bright light for this team, and that is the Golden State Warriors. And again, if Draymond Green played majority of the year and not been suspended, they'd probably be a 4-5 seed. So I just think Steph Curry is still one of, like, when we talk about consistency, I think Steph Curry has had a more, especially when he's the main focus offensively for a team that struggled all year to find their offensive consistency outside of him. I think Steph Curry definitely deserves to be on the second team. Anthony Edwards, the Minnesota Timberwolves is the third team in the West. They're one of the best teams, and Anthony Edwards, he came out and said that he's going to be the best player in the league in a few years. I think there's a little bit too much dip on his ship, but not, in fact, there's some dip on his ship, but not too much. Anthony Edwards is like that, bro. And with Karl-Anthony Towns being out majority of the second half of the year and not really having a consistent offensive weapon for the Minnesota Timberwolves outside of Anthony Edwards, it's incredible that they were able to hold on to a top seed in the West. And a lot of that is because of Anthony Edwards. He is one of the best players in basketball. And while I don't know if he's going to be the best player in a few years, he's definitely going to be up there. So that's why I have him. Sabonis, I think that he broke the record for a single season with the most consecutive double-doubles. And I know a lot of people don't talk about the Kings because it doesn't get much coverage. And obviously due to injuries and inconsistency this year, they weren't as good as they were last year. But Sabonis was still incredible. And Sabonis, when you talk about big men and you talk about, you know, ranking the top big men, I know his name obviously doesn't get thrown in there that much, but he definitely needs to. Sabonis is great. So that's why he's on my second team. And Anthony Davis, again, you have to reward things that are unexpected, and you have to reward the Lakers are in the playoffs, and the Anthony Davis has been one of the best consistent centers this year, or big men this year, especially when we talk about defense, when we talk about reliability for his team, when we talk about where his team ranks and finishes in the season. Anthony Davis has been great. And I don't know if there is – I think Anthony Davis is probably, Anthony and Wimby are probably the biggest, let's say, beneficiaries for Jokic not, or no, for Joel Embiid not playing. Now, I do think that they still had great seasons, but one of these spots would have been for, would have gone to, let's see, would have gone to Joel Embiid. One of these spots probably would have gone to Donovan Mitchell if he was able to, you know. So, but I'm not taking away from Anthony Davis. I'm not taking away from Wimby. My all-NBA second team is Jalen Brunson, Steph Curry, Anthony Edwards, Sabonis, and Anthony Davis. I don't even need to stay on this long. We all should know who the All-NBA team is. It's the three players that are finalists for the MVP. And then it's the two players with the with arguably the best records. You have Luka Doncic, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Jason Tatum, Giannis Antetokounmpo, and Nikola Jokic. Luka Doncic, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, and Jokic are all three MVP candidates. For some reason, Jason Tatum's not an MVP candidate, but he's the best player on the best team, and that is the Boston Celtics. They have the best record. And while it, you know, the season didn't look exactly how we thought it would look when the Bucks got Damian Lillard, Giannis has still been incredible when he's on the floor. And those have Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Luka, Jason Tatum, Jokic, and Giannis have been clear-cut the best five players in this league, hands down, this year. And it's only right and obvious that they are my All-NBA All-NBA first team. So, and I think if those five do not make the team, I think I will say this. The reason why I said that Anthony Davis and Victor Wembanyama were probably the biggest beneficiaries for Joel Embiid, or biggest because Joel Embiid wasn't on this list, of course, they were awarded to a lot of other players. I still think the voters would have a tough time on their hands. I think Giannis probably would have been the person that goes to the second team, but every single player, Luka, Shai, Tatum, Jokic, and Giannis, all of them, even if Joel Embiid, even if Donovan Mitchell was able to play or able to be on these teams, they would still make it. So those are my all-NBA teams. Those are my all-defensive teams. Those are my all-rookie teams. And, yeah, let's go all the way back. And let's have this conversation for a second. You have the unpopular topic of the day. Looking at this Bill Belichick, Robert Kraft situation, for people that don't know what I'm talking about, Bill Belichick obviously was the head coach of the New England Patriots, the dynasty that was the New England Patriots. It was a very messy ending with Tom Brady and then with Bill Belichick. And Bill Belichick was obviously trying to get a head coaching job this year, seeing as though him and the Patriots mutually parted ways. And reports came out and were confirmed that Robert Kraft, who was the owner of the New England Patriots, was calling teams to discourage them from hiring Bill Belichick, who was obviously his former head coach. And, you know, that's a terrible look for Robert Kraft. And it's a terrible look because it's extremely petty and it essentially affects someone's living moving forward. Now, yes, when you've made millions upon millions, you should be good for life. But it essentially affects what they do moving forward. And if I'm not with you anymore, if I'm not part of your company, if I'm not part of your team, why are you affecting, you know, what I'm doing? But I will say, on the other hand, this is exactly what happens. And this is why it's very important. I'm not saying if you want to burn a bridge, do your thing. You do what you want to do, you know. But this is why it's so important to not burn bridges. Because while this is one of the first times we've seen this, we've seen this as far as mainly talked about, this happens all the time, not just in the NFL. Like, yeah, it's a bad look for him, but if you watch the Dynasty documentary, it did not paint Bill Belichick in the best light at all. Like, when you are rude to people, when you talk to people any type way, when you're very rigid and stern, it rubs people the wrong way. So then now when you need to lean on relationships, because that's essentially what working in sports is leaning on relationships, whether that's a player, head coach, the media. You get situations like this. Again, Robert Kraft isn't the first and most definitely won't be the last person. That's why they talk about references in any job. When they say, yo, you got any references? That's what it is. Robert Kraft is always going to be a reference. And when you hear things like don't trust Bill Belichick, he's not good to work with. I said this before about Bill Belichick, and I say this a lot. Winning takes you so far. Winning can take you to a lot of places, but once winning stops, it really shows you how you're really viewed. Klay Thompson can put up the four for four championships all the time, but when you're not winning now and you need to see what your value is, now people are going to start having honest conversations about you. And I'm not saying Klay Thompson's trash, but what I'm saying is things that people maybe weren't able to say because you were winning four championships, things that people weren't able to say because you were, you know, winning all those Super Bowls, Bill Belichick, now that you're not winning and now that you need me, yeah. Now you're about to see how people really feel about you. So I do think it's petty. I do think it's a terrible look for Robert Kraft, but I'm also not surprised. Everything that we've heard from Bill Belichick, everything that we've seen from Bill Belichick, whether we talk about the draft, whether we talk about some of his former players, how they talk about him. I don't know one player that has ever come out and said that Bill Belichick is easy to work or easy to play under. They didn't say he's not a good coach, but easy to play under, I don't think I've heard that once. That's all I'm saying, man. Just understand that this isn't the first and this won't be the last time somebody discourages an organization, a team, an entity from somebody else getting a job. It's all about relationships, man. So, and there you have it, man. That's been today's episode of the Unpopular Podcast. I truly, truly appreciate you guys. If you want an Unpopular Podcast shirt, hoodie, sweater, long sleeve joggers, the link is in the description below. I have multiple different colors, multiple different designs. Get your Unpopular Podcast merch today. Also, please subscribe to the YouTube channel. I'm trying to get as many subscribers as possible. I truly appreciate you guys that have subscribed and telling people to subscribe. If you like the content, if you support the content, tell a friend to tell a friend to tell a friend to subscribe. It definitely, definitely means a lot. Also, I understand that some people only watch me on YouTube. Some people listen to me on DSPs. If you do listen to me on DSPs, subscribe, follow whatever DSP, whether that's Apple Podcasts, whether that's Spotify, whether that's SoundCloud. It definitely, definitely means a lot. I appreciate everyone that supports me. So if you do just listen on the DSPs, subscribe. It means a lot. Also, follow the socials. Follow Instagram, follow TikTok. I post pretty much daily. That's where, you know, the fastest way to get to me. You can we can debate. You can talk about how much you like my take. You can talk about how much you hate my take. That's probably the best place to do it. Obviously, all the links are in the description below. Subscribe to or follow the socials. It's fun over there. When you do subscribe to the socials, a lot of the reels I have to cut down and a lot of the clips I have to cut down because you know, the reels are only 1 minute on YouTube. Well, you probably get a whole minute and a half, minute 45, 2.5 minute clip on TikTok, on Instagram. So if you want to see the entire reel, more than likely it's on social. So go follow those. Until next time, much love.